Good morning and welcome to Up to Date. Steve Kraske is away this week. I'm Brian Ellison. Primary elections in Kansas and Missouri are 1 week from today, and almost all week on the program, we're bringing you the issues and candidates that will be on the ballot. On the Kansas side, a lot of the action will wait until November, but one primary race in particular has gained a lot of attention, more than you might expect for one of the less prominent elected statewide offices, especially with an incumbent in place. But that incumbent is Kris Kobach. He's well known around the country for his work on election and immigration laws and other issues. His opponent, Scott Morgan, says that that's actually a big part of the problem. Both say they're the best choice, though, to serve as the Kansas Secretary of State, and we've invited them both here today to help voters sort out who should be the GOP nominee this time around. Scott Morgan is here in the studio. Good morning to you, Scott.
Good morning, Brian.
And Kris Kobach is on the phone and will be with us in the studio any minute now. Secretary Kobach, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you.
It's not too early for you, our listeners, to add your thoughts to the conversation this morning. If you have questions for the candidates, you can email them to us at uptodate@kcur.org. You can also send them to us on Twitter. We are at KCUR UpToDate. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being part of today's conversation. If past debates and forums are any indication that you'll have some things to say about each other today, I think we can count on that. But I want to start by asking you to talk about yourselves. What is the intersection of the job of Secretary of State, its responsibilities and qualifications, the needs of Kansas, and you, your own abilities and talents and background and experience that makes you the right choice? Let me start with you, Mr. Morgan.
Well, it is an odd job. I mean, most people don't know what Secretary of State is. They get it confused with the national office. It is largely a clerical position. My background, I'm a fifth-generation Kansan, worked for Senators Kassebaum and Dole in Washington, represented the United States Senate on the Federal Election Commission, and was chief counsel for Senator Dole's presidential campaign in 1988. We came back to Kansas. I was chief counsel for Governor Hayden. And then my wife and I started a publishing business on state and city statistics. And we spent 17 years on that business and two terms on the Lawrence School Board. All of that is kind of a mishmash, but what it does is it provides me with the private and the public side that makes me uniquely qualified for Secretary of State. Again, it's largely clerical, but that background, I'm prepared for it. And I think the biggest thing I bring is just a remarkable passion for the right to vote.
Let's get the same question answered from you, Secretary Kobach. Where do the needs of this job and your particular talents and responsibilities intersect?
Well, as some of your listeners know, since I did a fair amount of shows on the on KCUR in the past with Walt Bodine and others, I spent 15 years as a UMKC law professor. Took 2 years away to work as a counsel and White House fellow for U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft in Washington. And I also have many years' experience litigating on the issue of illegal immigration, representing cities and states around the country, as well as 10 ICE agents in the case right now, in the interest of enforcing our immigration laws more strongly. The Secretary of State's office has two principal responsibilities. It is the chief administrative official for elections in the state, and it is also the chief official for business filings in the state. And where the intersection is for me is on the rule of law. For many years, I've fought for the rule of law in immigration, that is to say, we welcome legal immigration, but not illegal immigration in this country, and there are ways to strengthen the rule of law. Similarly with elections, voter fraud has been a growing problem up until we took some steps to solve it in Kansas. And again, the rule of law needs to be respected in our elections. We need combative and open and very vigorous elections, even controversial ones. But at the end of the day, we all need to be confident that the person who had the larger number of votes was the winner and that there was not a single fraudulent vote cast. And that's why Kansas has adopted a proposal that I pushed through the legislature in 2011, the Secure and Fair Elections Act. And I'll just briefly mention it since I imagine we'll be talking about it during this debate. That act made Kansas the first state in America to combine photo ID at the polls, equivalent security for mail-in ballots, and proof of citizenship when people register. So we became the first state to do those three things. A number of other states have since copied us, including Alabama and Pennsylvania. And I think that's what this election is going to be about. I'm in favor of fighting to keep those reforms on the books, and I believe Mr. Morgan would take a different approach.
Well, let's talk about election law. Obviously, that is a big part of the role of Secretary of State to oversee the state's elections. Mr. Kobach has named his responsibility for the current election law in the state of Kansas. Scott Morgan, what do you think?
I am have never been convinced that there has become a sudden need in Kansas after 150 years that we need to require citizenship paper proof before people can register here. Mr. Kobach provided a list of 235 allegations. Note that they were allegations of some sort of voting impropriety to the legislature. This was from 97 to 2012. He had 235, of which only 18 mentioned aliens, of which only 5 may have voted. Over 10 million Kansans voted during that period, but yet for that reason, but because of that, we stuck these requirements in, and now we've got 19,000 Kansans in suspense who can't vote, and it's just a math problem to me. I don't understand why, even if you give him the worst case, 235 out of 10 million is such a big dang deal, but for 19,000 Kansans sitting here who can't vote before their vote is canceled before they can even cast it. And he dismisses it and brags about a 72% success rate in people who try to register. I think that's an embarrassment. And I think our republic demands that we have a broad and engaged electorate. And when we start limiting the right to vote in order to supposedly protect it, I get very nervous.
Secretary Kobach, you and I talked about this once before, maybe a year ago here on KCUR, in the context of another state's election laws. What evidence do you have that there is a threat in terms of election fraud in Kansas?
Well, we do have the 235 cases that were presented to the legislature that Mr. Morgan alluded to. In addition to those, we have approximately 70 aliens that we know of who have registered to vote, and many of whom have voted in Kansas. But Mr. Morgan presents a sort of a red herring. He says, well, 235 cases of voter fraud out of 10 million, that's a very small fraction. And indeed it is. But you could say the same thing. The number of voters who voted in the infamous Chicago election of 1960 in the presidential race, which, you know, most people think had a lot of fraud in it, was also a very small fraction of the total number of votes cast in Illinois that year. The question is not what percentage of total votes cast are fraudulent. The question is this: do you have close elections in which a handful of illegal votes could swing the results? And the answer is unquestionably yes. In the past 10 years, since 2004, Kansas has had 24 elections where the margin of victory is 50 votes or less, and those are elections for state representative seats and for members of Congress. Of those 24, 3 were decided by a margin of 5 votes or less, and 1 was a dead tie that had to be settled with a coin toss. So we do have close votes, and we do have many, many cases where you have a handful, and in one case approximately 50, illegal votes cast, and that can steal an election. And I think many Kansas Cityans are quite familiar with the case on just the other side of the state line in North Kansas City, where you had the Rizzo versus Royster Democrat primary, a case where now even the Kansas City Star acknowledges that the election was stolen, where fraud occurred in multiple forms, both with aliens voting as well as people voting who lived outside of the district. The margin of victory there was 1 vote. So to say, well, look, Missouri only has, you know, a small percentage of fraudulent votes cast, that's a completely inaccurate and irrelevant mathematical statement to make.
Let me interrupt just long enough to let Scott Morgan respond to the numbers you're throwing out there.
The herring here is that he has no election in Kansas, none, that has ever been changed by voter fraud. He thinks it's always this fear of the unknown, the scary thing, this tip of the iceberg. They're out there. There's evil people. He talks about the close elections. We have them. We're not Chicago. We're not Missouri. We're Kansas. It's a very different creature. And for 150 years, our elections have been fair, and we have trust in them. And you've got to remember, the 19,000 Kansans aren't able to participate in all these close elections that he talks about. Far more, we have proof that far more elections have been changed by low voter turnout than have ever been changed by any kind of alleged fraud. It's just, most of those 235 were widows who got ballots for their husbands or people who double vote. I mean, nothing which was dealt with the citizenship papers. There were only 5 of those that may have voted. And it boggles my mind that he dismisses the 19,000 who are out there. And these are the people who actually filled out the paperwork, let alone the ones who turn away because they don't have their birth certificate or their passport. It's just a completely different way of looking at it, the same issue.
So let me ask you this, Scott Morgan. Would you have reformed Kansas election laws at all, or will you if you are elected as Secretary of State?
Because of my passion for the right to vote, I think you always have to be on guard to ensure that people have confidence in elections and that people believe in them. He is very dismissive of the idea. So, yes, I would have been not reformed them, but I think you have to be vigilant. You have to look at if there are allegations of fraud. You need to work with county prosecutors. You need to work with people and try to address those. These are solvable problems without creating a massive new one. Government, as Republicans, we're supposed to be against government regulation and restrictions. Any regulation has to solve more problems than it creates. This one has created a far bigger one than it solved.
And let me ask you this, Secretary Kobach. Let's say that there is evidence that voter ID laws like the one in Kansas now discourage minority voters in particular, people who are legal voters, not illegal immigrants, but legal voters from going to the polls. If that could be shown, would that suggest to you that there's a problem with these laws?
Well, you're asking me to assume a false predicate for the question. In fact, the opposite is true. The state that has the best data on this is Georgia, which is the longest. Georgia and Indiana have photo ID in place the longest. And then that argument was made by people on the far left. They said, well, it's going to discourage minority voters. Now, of course, the argument is somewhat racist, I believe, because you're saying that a person's skin color affects their ability to get a free government ID or to have one in the first place. But anyway, the data was there that shows that the opposite is true. Minority participation jumped in 2008. Well, people said, well, that's just because President Obama was on the ballot. Well, it jumped again in 2010, and it has remained high in 2012. And so minority participation has gone up, and many people say it probably reflects the fact that in that state there was widespread assumption that many of the localized races were fraudulent, stolen, and so people weren't voting out of concern that their vote wasn't going to be counted fairly anyway. So in many ways, you tighten up the system and make it fair, people will have the confidence to vote. One other response to your question. This issue has been polled by Survey USA of Kansas voters, and the support for photo ID among African-American voters and among Latino voters, and I don't think they did any other breakdowns by ethnic or racial group, but the support among non-white voters was really high. I believe it was in the high 80s percentage-wise among African-American voters for photo ID. So if it somehow has a racially disparate impact, that isn't being shown in the statistics from Georgia or in the responses of African-American voters to surveys in Kansas.
You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. We're talking today with the two candidates for the Republican nomination for Secretary of State in Kansas, the incumbent Chris Kobach and his challenger Scott Morgan. I want to shift gears to talk a little bit about another issue that's been coming up a lot on the campaign trail, and that is the amount of time that you, Secretary Kobach, spend on the work of Secretary of State versus outside commitments or other work you do around the country. Let me start with you, Secretary Kobach. How much time would you say the job of Secretary of State requires in terms of how people think about other jobs? Is it a 40-hour-a-week job? Is it 50 hours? Is it 20 hours? How much time does it take?
Well, it varies. It's it's an executive position, and so it's not a position where you punch the clock. So some weeks will be 60-hour weeks because there will be meetings going into the weekends and into the evenings. Other weeks, there will be a relatively small amount on the schedule. I'll still spend a minimum of 40 hours doing the Secretary of State job, but there's relatively little urgent that needs to be done. So it varies a lot depending on what's going on. In the run-up to an election, obviously the Secretary of State's job gets very busy. During the legislative calendar between January and the end of April, very busy because we're working with the legislature. So it really fluctuates. It's not like you punch the clock at 8 o'clock and then you come out at 5 o'clock. But I spend, I would say on average 40 to 50 hours a week doing Secretary of State work. And, I made very clear in 2010 that in my spare time, I was not going to be playing golf anymore. I was going to be devoting my spare time to working on cases to discourage illegal immigration around. I have a very small number of cases where I represent, right now representing 10 ICE agents against the Obama administration. And so while other people are spending their evenings watching football or maybe catching a quick nine holes of golf, I am laboring over my computer writing legal briefs. And I think how I spend my spare time is up to the person who holds the office. And I have made it very clear to voters that if they want someone who's a good golfer, they should absolutely vote for somebody else. But if they want someone who cares about securing the rule of law, then I'm their choice.
Yeah, I mean, Secretary Kobuch, do you feel like that work is totally unrelated? Is it a totally separate matter from your work as as Secretary of State? Or do you think that in some way it is related? It complements what you do here. Are the principles the same in the work you do, as you say, in your spare time?
There is some overlap in terms of the guiding principles. Absolutely, there's no overlap in the in the labor of it, so to speak. In other words, I'm very careful not to involve any state employees in any way in the legal work I do on the side. But yeah, the principle of the rule of law is the same in both, that we want to secure the rule of law in our immigration system just like we want to secure it in our election system. There's another bit of overlap too, and that is I've had to defend our proof of citizenship law and our photo ID law in court. We're fighting against the Obama Justice Department and against the ACLU, and so far we're winning both of those lawsuits. Right now, there was a third case on photo ID, which the plaintiffs ended up dismissing. My skilled litigator is helpful in defending our election security law.
Fair enough. Let me ask you, Scott Morgan, you've been critical of right. Secretary Kobuch's outside commitments.
And I guess apparently the most major issue I need to clear up is I don't play golf.
So no matter who you elect, they will not be a good golfer.
I'm okay at mini golf, I guess. But the problem I have is if this were a Democrat, I think Republicans would be livid. I mean, Mr. Kobuch makes tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars each year representing these clients throughout the state, a country that have nothing to do with Secretary of State's office. Secretary of State is paid $86,000 a year. It is a full-time professional job. You can have outside activities. You cannot have multiple professional jobs. It's just not possible by definition. You can't be an attorney that then has all sorts of, if you were an attorney by the hour, you can do that all the time. But if you are an attorney for a company, you give your full professional energy to that company. And in this case, he needs to be focused on the office. It's not a 40-hour week job. He needs to be out preaching the gospel of voting, encouraging people to voting. He needs to be finding ways to make the office more efficient on the mundane side that he has no interest in. You got to remember, he doesn't want to be Secretary of State. He's got great ambitions, and that's fine. That's not what this job is. It is a clerical job.
Well, let me stop you there. I mean, is there a specific aspect of the job that you think he's legally required to do that he's not doing?
I think it's unethical that he makes the amount of money he makes outside the office for clients. I've not ever accused him of committing a felony in this thing. I just think Kansans need to be aware of it. He owns it. In Ottawa, he compared himself to a single mother working two jobs, which I just found offensive. I mean, he's not that. And so he owns it. That's great. But I think Kansans should be upset about it, that somebody that they pay so much to thinks it's okay to run around the country calling himself the guardian of state sovereignty. That's not his job.
Quick response, Chris Kobuch, are you not doing your job? Or are you doing something that isn't your job?
I think it's laughable that Mr. Morgan thinks a person cannot focus on two professions. And I do think
saying it's laughable. I think it's a shame. I think it is an outrage. There are a lot of things I think it is. It's not funny.
I want to let Chris Kobuch respond.
Look, there are plenty of Americans these days who work two careers and they work 70, 80-hour weeks like I do because they really care about what they're doing. I care about these things and I'm willing to spend my spare time doing that. And one other point that Mr. Morgan never mentions when he makes this accusation, past Secretary of State, under his definition, will be unethical too. Secretary of State Thornburg, who was elected four times to the office, had a real estate investment firm that he made a lot of money from, and that was his right to do it.
I'm running against Chris Kobuch. I'm not running against Ron Thornburg.
All right.
My point is that past Secretaries of State have also had businesses that they did in their spare time, but of course they weren't reforming our election laws in a way that liberals, I should say very hardcore liberals, object to, and that's what
He keeps springing up something that I do find funny for a Secretary of State. Remember, this is a guy who asked me to leave the Republican Party as a Secretary of State. Everything to him is liberal, conservative, wrong, right, black, white. It's just such a clear-cut world out there to him. And I want to get into that issue at some point. I don't know if you're wanting to move on.
Let me move on to sort of the role this office has as a Republican, at least the winner of this primary has as a Republican candidate for statewide office. But first, let me invite our listeners to join the conversation. I want to know what your questions are for the Republican Secretary of State candidates, Chris Kobach and Scott Morgan. We're looking especially this hour for honest questions from undecided voters, or at least questions that reflect something you really think you and your fellow voters need to know. So not so much political speeches from our callers today, but real questions that will add to the debate. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888 with your questions for Chris Kobach and Scott Morgan. You can also still email us at Central Standard. I'm sorry, that's the wrong show. At UpToDate at KCUR.org. Or you can tweet at us. We are at KCUR. Up to date. We actually had a comment on Twitter from Hunter. He says, in light of criticism that the GOP has received, how will you push the party, the Republican Party, into the future? And I think Hunter's question sort of gets at the role that that any candidate, any nominee for statewide office on behalf of their party has as a leader in their party. Let me ask each of you that question. How do you see yourself as a standard bearer for Kansas Republicans? Scott Morgan?
Well, I think that uniquely among statewide offices, the Secretary of State needs to be someone that everybody, whether they're Republican, they're Democrat, conservative, libertarian, liberal, whatever label they want to place on themselves, feel like they have a fair adjudicator, someone who is the chief elections officer who will give everyone a fair hearing to make sure that it's not partisan. And so you have to be very careful about being some sort of leader for your party. I think the fact that Mr. Kobach has a PAC that he contributes and endorses candidates, I know he's proud of that, but I just think it's wrong. And so what I would hope for the GOP, one of the things I want to get across is I want to quit giving out the image that we're afraid of new voters, that we're afraid of different voters. I want to compete for those votes. And I think that we have an ability to do that. But we've got to get back to being a reasonable center-right party. We've got to get away from extremism. And particularly for this office, we've got have to come across and be the people that they can trust in that office.
Secretary Kobach, do you consider yourself a leader of Kansas Republicans in this role?
Yes, a statewide elected Republican is a leader of Kansas Republicans and can also serve as an unbiased arbiter of elections. And, you know, let's make one thing clear here. We're talking about a GOP primary. And Mr. Morgan's positions are exactly the opposite of the GOP platform. The 2012 National Republican platform, and I served on the committee that drafted that platform in Florida, is in favor of photo ID and is in favor of proof of citizenship. Mr. Morgan takes the opposite position. In a 2008 survey, he is against concealed carry. He thinks abortion should be legal under every circumstance, and he's for in-state tuition for illegal aliens. These are all positions opposite that of the Republican Party. So I think he's an articulate man. He's an excellent candidate for office, but not for this party. He should, if he wishes to represent a party, he should at least reflect that party's positions, and he does not. I'd love to debate him in the general election. He'd make a fine Democrat candidate for Secretary of State.
And I think we really have got to get away from where we do what Mr. Kobach just has done, because I worked for Senators Kassebaum and Senator Dole. They had very different views on a lot of those issues. And yes, I apparently have, from my state Senate race, more liberal views than Mr. Kobach. I'm okay with that. But I think neither Nancy Kassebaum nor Bob Dole would have ever in a million years pulled the stunt of trying to ask one of them, as he did, Kobach has done with me, to leave the party. They wouldn't have done it. We were a broad party that had a belief in smaller government. The fact that he does, like in his own time, he goes up and he drafts laws ordinance for Fremont, Nebraska, that requires anyone who's going to rent a home in that town to register with the police. That has nothing to do with, to me, Republicanism, to require a police permit to live in a town. But he does that. That has nothing to do with the Secretary of State's office. It's one of those unique offices where those issues don't get into it. I am a Republican. My family's been a Republican since there was a Republican Party in Kansas. And for a guy to Wisconsin to trip in and say, you're not Republican enough for me. I look forward to Mr. Kobach telling people who also don't agree with him on every issue to not vote for him and to not vote for any Republicans.
I want to ask, you actually raised this a moment ago, Scott Morgan, that you alleged that Kris Kobach has other ambitions. I want to ask both of you. Sometimes the various statewide offices are proving grounds for candidates who one day go on to serve the state or the country in even bigger roles, maybe a place we could call it to cultivate leadership for the party or for the state. For each of you, I'd like to know, is that the case for you? Do you see yourself taking on growing leadership in the state or in the nation by serving in this office, Secretary Kobach?
Well, you know, if you'd have asked me in 2006, do you intend to run for Secretary of State in 2010, I would have probably said no. But what happened between 06 and 10 was that the issue of voter fraud became a very prominent one. I think people will recall the 2008 election where Acorn was all over the news. And voter fraud was occurring in many different states. And it occurred to me that as a law professor who supports the rule of law and has designed solutions for states and cities around the country and that in the immigration area, this is a situation that we can solve that wouldn't be rocket science. There are reasonable solutions we could take and that Kansas could be a great state to lead the rest of the country in doing that. And so I chose this office to run for in 2010 because I felt they could add value. So will I be Secretary of State forever? Probably not. I don't anticipate that I would want to stay here for four or five months.
And you, Scott, sorry. Go ahead and finish, Secretary Kobach.
Do I know what the future holds? No, I don't.
Okay.
No, I don't be here for the rest of my life.
Fair enough. Scott Morgan?
And I'm 57. I have no any illusions of grandeur that I had at any point were beaten out of me by three children in my own business. I actually am excited about being Secretary of State. I'm excited about working on the clerical side of it and making that better. And I'm really, really excited about preaching the gospel of voting and getting more Kansans to vote.
All right. Well, let's take a break. We need to take a pause for a few moments. We have several callers with their questions. We've got questions coming in by email, but there's room for more. Give us a call at 816-235-2888 with your questions for the candidates for the Republican nomination for Secretary of State in Kansas. That's 235-2888. You can also email us. We're at uptodate@kcur.org or send those in by Twitter. We're at KCUR. Up to date. Stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Today, we are hosting a forum between the candidates for Secretary of State, the Republican nomination in Kansas. Joining us are Scott Morgan, the challenger, and the incumbent Kris Kobach. Scott's here in the studio. Kris Kobach is by phone. And we are talking with them about the responsibilities of the office. We're also taking your calls at 816-235-2888. We'll be getting to those calls in just a moment. Let me ask you both about another one of the responsibilities of the office. And you mentioned this at the top of the hour, Secretary Kobach, as the second primary responsibility of the job, and that is handling business filings for the state. How do you think the office is doing with its core function of maintaining records and registrations and so on for businesses and corporations? Secretary Kobach?
I think we're doing a great job, and I think the numbers prove it. One of the most important things a person does when he starts a business is he files the initial papers to create his LLC or his S-Corp or whatever corporate form he uses with the Secretary of State's office. And lots of times people have questions, and we have some statistics that are really off the chart on how good our customer service is. And I can't really take credit for all of it because we've got a professional staff that's been there through many Secretaries of State. But some of the new procedures we put into place under my leadership have sped things up even more. 87% of the people who call get their question and issue resolved in under 3 minutes. And I believe the number is up to 95% get their questions resolved in under 10 minutes. Every single person who calls our office speaks to a human being, not to a computer. And we've streamlined things a great deal. For example, used to be when you filed your annual report for your business in Kansas, sometimes the filing would be rejected. And they'd be rejected for reasons like you said corp instead of corporation when you type in your company name and it didn't match. Well, we looked at the Kansas statutes and we said, hey, we can cut some red tape here because the statutes don't require an exact match. And so we did all kinds of things to change the filing process and speed it up. One other thing I want to mention real quickly that we've done, and this is a big one, we're the first state in America to do it, and that is your accountant, say you have an LLC and you also hire an accountant who does your bookkeeping, your accountant probably has any one of about 5 or 6 software packages out there. Right now, what he has to do, though, is when he does your annual report, he had to, in the past, type in all the information by hand, and he couldn't just press a button and have it send automatically from his accounting software. Well, the Kansas Secretary of State's office is now working with these companies, and we've already got one of the largest ones, so that we have a seamless interface. You can actually, using XML language bridge is the best way to describe it. Our software now talks to the accounting software, so it's making life really easy for accountants to just press a button, all the information downloads to the Secretary of State's office.
All right.
And these changes are having good results. We're seeing more businesses, record number of businesses formed in the state of Kansas in 2013.
Scott Morgan, obviously it's a different situation when you're not in the office now. How do you think the office is doing with its function of maintaining records and registering companies?
I find that his statistics that he throws out, unsubstantiated as they are, about the rapidness with which things are dealt, are about I think I'll go ahead and try to respond to this.
Just one second, Secretary Kobach.
Well, it's actually probably going to take a little longer than 1 second. But what I am finding as I go around the state is that, you know, this is a side of the office that a lot of people, their eyes will glaze over. But with the people who deal with it, the attorneys are out there, the different folks, the business people, they are not respond. There is a high level of frustration with how the quality of the work and that is out there. I think one of the things you have to look at is when he announced his campaign for reelection, he bragged one of his accomplishments was that he had proposed a central web portal. And as a former small business person, I sat there and I knew that I had to file certain things with the Secretary of State, certain things with revenue, certain things with labor, and it would get confusing. And I think a web portal, a central clearinghouse, would be awesome. The fact is, though, after 4 years, it doesn't happen, and he blames other agencies. If you put half the energy he puts into Arizona immigration law into this office, that would be a solved issue. You've got to want to do this. This isn't his passion. His passion is immigration. His passion is all sorts of things. And this is a side of the office that he, frankly, just isn't very good at. And he's really smart. He can do lots of things. He doesn't want to do it. And I think that's what he should be freed up to do, all these other things that he wants to do, if that's what he's called upon, that's his passion. But within this side of the office, you take my daughter trying to register to vote online. She sits there, goes through, the thing freezes up. It's incredibly clunky. Her passport picture, she uploads it. She has one, so she uploads it. I watch her do it. She gets a letter a week later that she's been rejected because she hadn't provided citizenship papers. I don't know a lot about programming, but I could so solve that issue. And so I find it hard to believe that he has ever spent more than about 10 minutes looking at the clerical side of this office.
Quick response from you, Secretary Kobach.
Well, I've spent many, many, many weeks, indeed months, working solely on this issue of the office. He obviously hasn't even done the research about the office he wants to represent. You can go to sos.ks.gov. You can see the press.
Remember, this is
Let him finish. Go ahead.
As long as I can respond to that.
Had a very long audit of all of the phone calls made to our office, tens of thousands of phone calls. That's where those statistics come from, for the very short duration it takes to solve problems. We have an excellent personal staff, and the new protocols have sped things up even more, and the proof is in the pudding. In 2013, we had 15,400 businesses formed in the state of Kansas. My office now tracks that. That is higher than any other year on record, and that shows that it's easy to start a business in Kansas.
And very quickly, Scott Morgan.
Well, obviously, we disagree with this, and I do find that the fact that he still doesn't have the web portal is fairly reflective.
816-235-2888. That's the number where you can call in with your questions for Secretary Kris Kobach and his challenger, Scott Morgan, for the Republican nomination for Kansas Secretary of State. 235-2888. Carla is calling from Olathe. Carla, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
What's your question?
My question is for Mr. Kobach, and I am wondering exactly what aggressive action and actions he is taking to assist those 19,000 people who have been kicked off the voter rolls and are in limbo in order to help them get registered so they can vote. I've heard horror stories about how difficult it is for them.
Okay. So thank you, Carla, for your question. The question to you, Secretary Kobach, and we'll give Scott Morgan a chance to respond as well. What about those that number of 19,000 voters who are allegedly in limbo, having been kicked off the rolls?
Okay, we have to be very clear about what we're stating here, because right now what Carla said is not accurate. No one has been kicked off the voter rolls. Those 19,000 individuals are people who have begun the registration process since January 1st, 2013. So in the last year and two-thirds, they began the process of registering, but they did not complete it because after that date, proof of citizenship is required to complete. So those are incomplete registrations. Any one of them can complete the process from his or her couch right now by taking a picture of their passport or birth certificate or naturalization document and emailing it into the county election office. So the none of them is being prevented. None of them have ever voted before. None of them have ever been registered before. No one's been kicked off. What we are doing, in answer to her question, is every single one of those people has received at least one mailing reminding them that, hey, you've got an election coming up and you can complete your process. They've also received a phone call from the relevant county. In addition, the county clerks, and that's what our state has mandated, in addition, the county clerks are taking other steps to reach out to them and remind them. We've also made available processes to do this very quickly and very easily, and we're also reminding people through public service announcements that they have up until election day. So even though your registration, you have to begin the registration no later than 21 days before an election, you can go ahead and send in that proof of citizenship, email it, and even text it in Johnson County up until the day before the election. So those people are, we hope, going to complete the process. It's now getting the time of year where people will, many people procrastinate. They say, well, heck, I got this mailer from the county. I'll wait until election time. And I expect that many of those people will finish their registration. But no one has been kicked off. Those are just incomplete registrations, and they represent about 17% of the total number of people who have started the registration process since January 1, 2013.
Scott Morgan, if you were in the office today, would that be your response to that caller's question?
No, I'd say Carla is exactly accurate and is right very much in calling these people suspended or whatever word you want to use. They're disenfranchised. These are people who have filled out the same paperwork that most of us filled out when we registered. They just didn't provide these citizenship papers that have been required. Remember, there still has been no evidence that we needed this supposed solution. And we've got it. These people cannot vote. I don't know how else that becomes anything other than they are suspended, they are disenfranchised. And he talks about what he's done there in the secretary's office. The ones who are doing just remarkable work are the county clerks and election commissioners across the state who are reaching out, spending all these resources trying to find these people and to help them. And you got to also remember, these are the people who actually bothered to go ahead and fill out the form without their citizenship papers. It used to be you'd do a voter's drive, you could do this registration drive, people would register. Now people walk up, they say, well, do you have your passport? Do you have your birth certificate? No, I don't carry those things with me. And so all those people turned away and never even bothered to register. He's almost dismissive of them as being – they also become dismissive of them as being casual voters, procrastinators. He's used all these terms. These are Kansans who are actually eligible to vote. And that's why I don't understand why he finds this to be such an insignificant issue.
I think we've heard you there. I will say that I know we keep coming back to these voter ID questions or to these voting registration questions. That certainly has been the interest of a lot of those who've been emailing us as well. And I guess the question, one of them that sticks with me from earlier in the hour, we had an email from Victor who says, please ask both candidates to explain why voter ID is a bad thing. And I suppose only one of our candidates would maybe be really the object of that question. I cannot understand why both individuals would not be for ensuring one vote per citizen.
I think those are two different issues. And I am the one who – and Mr. Kobach makes a lot that it's popular. And I guess I should have made clear that I didn't get into this necessarily to do everything that's popular. I think that we need to do what's right. It is a right. It is not a privilege. And when it comes to voter ID, for most of us, it is no big deal to – bring out your driver's license, show it, and vote. I get that. The problem is a right isn't the value of a right isn't based on what is good for most people. It's for all Americans. And I think we do need to ensure that it's one man, one vote, one person, one vote. But with any government restriction, as is what voter ID is, the fact that it's popular is fairly meaningless when it comes to a right. And that's why I'm running, is that I think that it is limiting some people. We talk about it, well, it's only a few hundred and each election. Well, that's one, that's a few hundred. And the other is all those people who don't have their purse with them, so they turn away and don't go and vote. Or the farmer that gets off the tractor and doesn't have his wallet with him. So they think, oh, I'm not going to vote. The reason I'm against it, or at least I want to look at it, is I think it's causing more problems than it's solving.
And Chris Kobach, it's in the years that it's been the law of Kansas, you're not worried that it's causing more problems than it's solving?
Absolutely not. And again, the statistics tell the story, but Mr. Morgan doesn't want to look at those numbers. If you look at our photo ID law, the caller is absolutely right, or the person writing the email is absolutely right. It doesn't cause any problems, and there's not any good reason to be against photo ID. In the 2012 presidential election, there were 1.2 million votes cast. There were 838 people who didn't bring their photo ID in at the time they voted, but they, of course, could bring it in during the following week, and hundreds of them did. That was 0.07%, or fewer than 1 in 1,000 voters, and they all had the chance to bring in their ID later and even get a free one and bring that one in if they wanted to. Look, we've made it easy to vote but hard to cheat in Kansas, and I think Mr. Morgan's solutions are completely, or his ideas are completely out of step with what Kansans want and what the reality is.
And I would point out that 800 out of 1.2 million is a lot bigger statistic than 235 out of 10 million,
all
but
right.
That one gets dismissed.
I think we've covered this territory pretty thoroughly, so let's move on away from election laws to some other aspects of the office's work, or perhaps it isn't part of the office's work. Secretary Kobach, on your website, your campaign website, you've lifted up your opposition to the federal government's listing of the lesser prairie chicken as an endangered species as a fulfillment of your duties as Secretary of State. Talk about how that is.
Well, you know, and I think this is really important, that when we're in a situation right now where the federal government has asserted power to control everything under the sun, and that's not too much of an exaggeration, when our founding fathers created a republic where the vast majority of power was to reside at the state level. The federal government would only have a limited number of powers, principally found at Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. The Secretary of State's job is the signifier of everything that is sovereignly done by the state. So, for example, if the state declares a day to be, you know, Marine Appreciation Day, you name it, then the Secretary of State has to sign it before it becomes official. If an appointment is made, the Secretary of State has to sign it. The Secretary of State is the keeper of state sovereignty, if you will. And when state sovereignty is under threat by, in this case, overreaching federal regulations that have no basis in the Constitution and no basis in the Commerce Clause of Article 1, Section 8, I think it's incumbent upon not only the governor and not only the Secretary of State, but every statewide elected official, including the state legislators, to do something to protect our state sovereignty. That's why I'm acting. And my background as a law professor, I think, helps in
Scott,
pushing back.
Thank you. Scott Morgan?
It's always hard because, I mean, he's Mr. Kobach is very bright. But he views the world in such a sometimes bizarro world where he becomes this comic book figure of guardian of state sovereignty. This isn't his job. The prairie chicken wasn't his job. The gun law that he got passed and drafted, while popular with some people, wasn't his job. And my whole point is, this is a job that requires a full-time Secretary of State who finds that job actually interesting and wants to do that job. And if he wants to do those things, there's a whole host of other jobs to do. When he sits there and he talks about how he brags that he's representing 10 ICE, these customs agents, in one thing because
well,
they can't enforce.
That's a change of the subject. I want to ask you, you don't think the Secretary of State's job is to be the guardian of state sovereignty?
No, he's a notarizer is what he's doing. And I'm enough of an attorney to know what he's claiming this guardian thing is. He has no obligation. And it's more than any other notary when they sign something to say that this is anything other than what it is, not that it's valid, that it's legitimate. It's just he's a notary.
Let me ask you, Chris Kobach, where does the idea come from that the Secretary of State's job is to defend the state's sovereignty?
Well, I'd like to respond to what he just said. The idea comes exactly where I said it comes from, and that is that no act of the state becomes sovereign, with very few exceptions, without the Secretary of State's signature. And in many cases, in many states, the Secretary actually physically keeps the state seal. But Mr. Morgan evidently doesn't understand all of the aspects of the Secretary of State's job. He also serves on the State Rules and Regulations Board. So my position on abortion, I am pro-life, is relevant because I had to rule on a regulation governing
his ruling. Go ahead,
Scott Morgan.
Misreading that rule. What his job there is to make sure the Secretary of Administration has done what he's supposed to do, and that the Attorney General has done what he has done. It's a checklist job.
It's not a checklist job. The Secretary of State on that board has to make sure that the rules comport with law and also to our good public policy. The Secretary of State also had to decide under our recent law whether the Memorial Hall building would allow concealed carry, because I support concealed carry. I do, and the Attorney General Schmidt also supports concealed carry. We made the decision to allow concealed carry in that government building. Again, Mr. Morgan's anti-concealed carry position has a bearing on a decision, an official decision he would have to make as Secretary of State. So for him to claim that the Secretary of State is nothing more than a glorified clerk shows his ignorance in what the Secretary of State actually does.
Let me ask you both about this. We had an email question from Rick. He wrote in with a question raised by several listeners. I'm concerned with disproportionate influence over Kansas policy. What is Mr. Kobach's relationship to the Koch brothers, and what level of influence do they have on Kansas policy? Maybe a broader question related to that, you know, what is the responsibility of the Secretary of State for keeping track of lobbyists, of influence that other folks exert on state policy? The question, let me put it first to you, Chris Kobach, what is your relationship with the Koch brothers, and are you concerned about their influence?
Well, I'm glad you asked. You know, it's funny. I see so many articles written, usually by, you know, on blog sites or on the far left end of the spectrum, because the Koch brothers are the boogeyman, of course, on the far left. I haven't received a penny from the Koch brothers, and people talk sometimes and say, well, Kobach's obviously so conservative, you must be in close communication with him. I think I might have met one of them once at the RNC convention in Florida, but I'm not even sure I did meet him. So I have not received a dime from them. I haven't had any communications about any policy from them. So I'd love to get to know them. They sound like interesting people, but it's a myth on the left. As for the Secretary of State job, he does have a very important job, and that's one that I take very seriously. We accept all of the campaign filings, and so the best antidote to money's influence in politics is openness, so you can see immediately where the money is coming from supporting various campaigns. And we are the filer of those documents that are submitted whenever a campaign, like, for example, just last week, the campaigns, and the due date was last week, the deadline was this week, the campaigns around the state had to submit their election reports of where they've been raising money and the sources of that money. So, yes, the Secretary of State does play a very important role there, and I think the key is openness and efficiency so that we get the information out to the public instantly on the Internet, and that's what we're succeeding to do.
And Scott Morgan, that part of the Secretary of State's job, would you handle it differently?
I would. I think the word that doesn't ever come up is fairness, and I think that the people of all political stripes have to have a belief and a trust that office will deal with all of their filings fairly, that their political ilk has nothing whatsoever to do with how they will be treated, how their filings will be treated, how the information will be disseminated. That lack of trust has been built up over 150 years, and I think, frankly, Mr. Kobach's highly partisan approach to it, proud as he is of it, has really hurt that trust.
Each of you has received a number of endorsements from individuals and groups that support you for this nomination. I guess of all the people and groups who are endorsing you, I'm curious which of those you are most proud of or think most significant, and why? What does it say about your candidacy? Let me start with you, Scott Morgan.
The nature of my campaign, I get excited when anybody endorses me, so I don't know that I'm going to single one out. It's like, which is your favorite child? I mean, I was honored to be endorsed by the Kansas Livestock Association, who just had grown weary of him inserting himself into a lot of their issues. I've been honored by the Kansas City Star, the Wichita Eagle, the Hutch News.
All right, there's four.
Because I'm excited. Not? They're my children. I mean, what I think, you know, this is a very David and Goliath thing. I have 21,000 that I've raised to his 200 and some thousand. Or 300, I guess he's got 200,000 in the bank. I have found endorsement and supports from a broad range of people who want this office to return to its tradition of quiet competence, and I'm honored by those endorsements.
Let me ask you, Chris Kobach, is there a particular endorsement or two that stands out as most emblematic of why you should be Secretary of State?
Yeah, there are a couple. One is an endorsement from an individual. She's Beth Chapman, former Alabama Secretary of State and former president of the National Association of Secretaries of State. And she said, quote, "Chris Kobach has been one of the most effective and engaged secretaries of state in the nation. His reforms have made Kansas a model for other states to follow," end quote. That one really makes me happy because it shows that other states are recognizing what Kansas is doing and that we've really become a leader in showing how you can secure your elections against fraud. The other endorsements that I'm very pleased about are Kansans for Life has endorsed me, and the National Rifle Association and the Kansas State Rifle Association. So those just reflect, you know, my general conservative views on these issues, and they do affect decisions the Secretary of State has to make, as I just pointed out.
Yeah.
As far as the Kansas Livestock Association endorsing my opponent, that's easy to explain. They're the lobbyists for beef producers, and they openly support the hiring of illegal labor, and that's something I've long opposed, so I'm not surprised on that one.
Let me ask you both. We're running a little short on time now, but it's pretty evident from listening to the both of you that you're probably not going to go out for a beer after election night, hang out. But I guess I am curious, after election night, whichever of you wins this primary election, you'll face Gene Schodorf, the sole Democratic candidate for the office. If you should lose the election next week, would you endorse your opponent, the Republican nominee, over Senator Schodorf? Let me start with you, Scott Morgan.
Oh, I think I would be shocked to get that request. He's asked me to leave the party. I don't know that he's going to be terribly excited to have my support. I think that my passion in the right to vote will determine who I would support if anyone actually asked for my support.
And Chris Kobach, would you endorse Republican nominee Scott Morgan over the Democrat?
Yeah, sure I would. And by the way, he's also serious and dour about me asking to leave the party. It was a tongue-in-cheek press release we did on July 1st, which was the last day you could switch parties under Kansas law, and just pointing out that his positions don't square with the Republican platform. And it's funny. I mean, you got to be able to take a joke in this business, because if you can't take a joke and you can't smile.
Well, I think
I'm in the area.
I appreciate that. I appreciate both of you being with us. I think we've heard some very clear differences in your outlooks and your positions, and I appreciate you taking the whole hour to be with us this morning. That's Secretary of State Chris Kobach from Kansas and his challenger in the Republican primary next week, Scott Morgan. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
You can find this broadcast to listen to it again or all of our other broadcasts at KCUR.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. The show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, Scott Ross, and Hannah Copeland. I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.